This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana on Earth Day, and happy Earth Day to you. And signature support for our program comes from the Mayor's Office, Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome's office in East Baton Rouge Parish, and the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Much to talk about. Later in the hour, we'll hear from one of the all-time greats in women's gymnastics at LSU, Susan Jackson. She, like many others, is overjoyed at LSU's national championship that happened Saturday. We'll get further details, and of course, there'll be a parade, a worthy parade for the champions come Wednesday of this week. And the new arena that is being discussed, where the women's gymnastics team and the LSU basketball team and all kinds of activities would take place, a $400 million proposal, is advancing, and Charles Landry is the attorney for the Tiger Athletic Foundation. He'll be with us in just a bit as well. We'll also talk a bit about Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, the Republican from Benton, Louisiana, two-time LSU graduate. He's under fire in his own party. Most of the Republicans voted against funding for Ukraine, and that was an embarrassment of sorts to Johnson, who apparently will need Democrats to save his job. And we'll have the latest. By the way, in our delegation, the vote was 3-3. Johnson, Scalise, and Troy Carter voted for funding for Ukraine. Garrett Graves, Clay Higgins, and Julia Letlow voted no to the $61 billion for Ukraine to fight its war that was started by Russia in Ukraine. And if you are a student of history, it was Richard Milhouse Nixon, the 37th president of the United States, who died on this date in 1994, 30 years ago, 4/22/24. Richard Nixon died. He was 81 years old. Hard to fathom, but he was only 61 when he resigned the presidency, and he'd already been elected president twice and vice president twice, served in the U.S. Senate, World War II veteran, a man who had done a lot of things in his 61 years before he was sent to pasture in the Watergate scandal. But in 1962, after losing a close race to John Kennedy for president of the United States, Richard Nixon lost a governor's race to Pat Brown, father of Jerry Brown, in California. And he was not happy. He waited until the wee hours of the morning at the Beverly Hilton to concede the race. And here's Robin Dow and what Nixon termed his last press conference. It was far from that, 12 years before Watergate. Here he is conceding the election to Pat Brown.
For 16 years, ever since the Hiss case, you've had a lot of fun. You've had an opportunity to attack me, and I think I've given as good as I've taken. I leave you gentlemen now, and you will now write it, you will interpret it, that's your right. But as I leave you, I want you to know, just think how much you're going to be missing. You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore. Because, gentlemen, this is my last press conference. And I hope that what I have said today will at least make television, radio, the press recognize that they have a right and a responsibility. If they're against a candidate, give him the shaft. But also recognize if they give him the shaft, put one lonely reporter on the campaign who will report what the candidate says now and then. Thank you, gentlemen, and good day.
And there he went. And of course, he came back 6 years later. He was leader of the free world. Interesting that he was referring to the press corps as gentlemen. And when you looked out at the crowd, I don't think there was a woman in the mix. So that's one of the things that's changed for the better. Now there may be as many or more women covering national politics than men, although there are fewer journalists, as we know, and that's not a good thing. But we will talk about these matters in the days and weeks and months and years to come. But we start our show today with Jessica McKelvey Kemp and Landon Hester, there with the Center for Planning Excellence. And this is the 18th year taking place at the Shaw Center downtown. The Center for Planning Excellence, CPEX for short, is holding the Smart Growth Summit, and it's designed to make Baton Rouge a better place. And there will be many speakers of note, and sometimes people don't really take these kinds of events seriously, but there will be all kinds of topics on the board, including climate action planning, solar energy, many kinds of things that involve climate-driven population movement. And Jessica, it does appear that there is a focus, I guess appropriately since we're celebrating Earth Day, on the environment as well as everything else in our community. This is a big part of this event, is it not?
That's right, Jim, and thank you so much for having us on this morning. The Smart Growth Summit is a time for us to come together and talk about some of these big challenges that Louisiana is facing, for us to come together on our shared values about what we want for the future of the state, and to engage with experts from around the country on some of the best practices, innovations, and tools that we can all get behind to help Louisiana and Baton Rouge and all our smaller communities become the best state it can be, to be sustainable, livable, and attract and retain talent and be a place where our kids and grandkids want to build their lives.
This is Thursday and Friday at the Shaw Center. I mentioned some of the items that involve climate. There's a session planning for extreme heat. Are we going to have extreme heat this summer? Is that a possibility?
it's more than a possibility. It's a likelihood. We already have had extreme heat. If you were here last summer, that was a record-breaking summer for many places across the globe, and we need to be ready and think about how it's impacting our infrastructure, our economy, our homes, and our health.
Okay. Now, Landon Hester is also with us, the communications lead for CPEX, and I see also that there will be a discussion about housing resilience, affordability, and insurability. And for those of us who live in Louisiana right now, we know the cost of insurance is going through the roof. And because of interest rates, if you buy a house, you're going to have to buy it for a lot more now than you did a few years ago. That's something that all communities in the country are facing. But what kind of advice will be provided at this event?
We will be talking about many of the issues facing Louisiana communities, but not just the issues, but also the opportunities that come with these issues. So everything from population movement to environmental risk, but also the technology and the renewable energy and all of the opportunities that Louisiana can benefit from.
And you've got Kona Gray as your keynoter, Jessica. He, Kona, nice name, unusual name, but it is a he. He's a principal at ASLA, president-elect, principal at EDSA. These are companies involved in what's going on, and ASLA is an organization. He has 30 minutes and 30 years of experience spanning over 30 countries, a lot of 30s there. But tell us what Kona will be focusing upon.
Well, Kona's going to be, so he is a world-renowned landscape architect, and he's really made a name for himself creating places that incorporate history and culture and sustainability, designing places that really speak to what our needs for the future are going to be, addressing some of those global challenges around climate, equity, and health. So we're really, you know, Kona has a lot of Louisiana connections, and we're really excited to bring him to our audiences here and hear what he has to say about what we might do in Louisiana.
All right. This is Thursday and Friday for those who have an interest in participating as in viewing, and I think questions will be invited as well. What's the best way to do it?
Summit.cpex.org. Registration's on there as well as our full schedule and list of speakers. But there are also discount codes available. For members, get 50% off using membership50 at checkout. And there is also a one-day registration, so if you can't make Thursday, feel free to join us on Friday, and you can use the code ONEDAY at registration to sign up, and you'll get a significant discount.
Now, this year's theme, Planning is Personal, Putting People First, underscores the impact of planning decisions on individuals and communities. And we're not only talking about climate issues, but there are urban questions, and I know I've been to a few of these through the years. In Baton Rouge, there's always a discussion about how we get people to and from places, and we don't do as good a job as we would like to. Are there some innovative things that might be beneficial as far as bringing us to a better place in transportation in this community?
Absolutely. And when the, you know, within the context of, you know, planning for heat, planning for population movement, thinking about how we can make our communities more sustainable, connecting the issues of land use, housing, and transportation is critical. And Baton Rouge is a perfect example of a place that could benefit from some more strategic thought around reducing sprawl, mm-hmm. Which contributes to congestion, making sure that people have what they need within a short distance and that they have choices on how to get there, whether that's walking, biking, or taking transit. These are all things that we need to do to help mitigate congestion.
We'll be back in just a few. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and Robin Dow and Renee Martin are producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Charles Landry is on deck, the well-known attorney who's involved in many facets of the law, but today he's here to talk about his role as the outside attorney for the Tiger Athletic Foundation. And LSU is endeavoring to build a new $400 million arena on campus that people like Charles Landry believe that would spur new activities and bring big acts. And also, of course, the Assembly Center is now 53 years old, so it would replace the Pete Maravich Assembly Center as the venue of note on the LSU campus. But before we get to Charles, I want to wrap it up with Landon Hester and Jessica Kemp, who are with the Center for Planning Excellence. And for those who are interested in the Smart Growth Summit this Thursday and Friday, it's cpex.org. That's summit.cpex.org, summit with one T, .cpex.org. And you can find out all you want to know about what's happening Thursday and Friday. And this is the 18th time it's happened. It's at the Manship Theater, much of it happening there, but there will be other activities in the Shaw Center. But Jessica, your parting thoughts about why you believe this is important for our community.
Thanks, Jim. It's important for the future of Louisiana and all of our communities. And the summit is a place where we come together to plan for our future. And it's for everybody. We offer continuing education credits, but whether you're a community leader, a planning practitioner, an elected official, the summit is for you. We want to hear your voice and have you be part of the conversation.
That's summit.cpex.org. And good luck, Jessica and Landon. Good to visit with you, and good. I hope you have a good event.
Thank you. Jim.
And we're joined by Charles Landry, who has, through the years, endeavored to make Baton Rouge a better place, and he's involved with this plan to build a new arena that could be over $400 million. The Advocate has been reporting this earnestly. Andrea Gallo and Laura Nicholson have done some fine stories. One of the more recent ones, as LSU officials move forward on a proposal to build a $400 million new arena on campus, they plan to use a law passed by the legislature last year to create a special taxing district surrounding the university, one with the power to give public dollars to private developers. The newly formed LSU Economic Development District, created by Senator Cleo Fields, spans from Brightside Drive through campus and all the way to the Knock Knock Museum near Dalrymple. It'll collect sales taxes from businesses on or around LSU's campus, including the Chimes on Highland Road and Walk-Ons on Burbank Drive. That's the start of the most recent story. A board of commissioners appointed by LSU's president will be responsible for creating sales taxes of up to 2% and deciding how to distribute the revenue generated. Now, Charles Landry, obviously there's no free lunch, but I know you have been out there making the case that as these things go, LSU and the public at large will get off perhaps on the cheap, because this is obviously a jewel for whoever develops it and runs it. So will they be paying most of the freight, or tell me how this is going to work?
Well, Jim, excellent question, and I appreciate the opportunity to be with you on your great program. The revenue from the Economic Development District will be a very, very small component of the financing stack for the new arena. The Economic Development District endeavor predated the thought of an arena by 6 or 7 years. This is the third LSU administration that has considered the Economic Development District, and the district will primarily, the revenue from the district will primarily be used for the enhancement of the area within the district, not for the arena. President Tate has made it very, very clear that his primary focus for the Economic Development District initially is public safety, lighting, crosswalks, sidewalk enhancements that extend into the retail areas north and south. He has a concept, although the concept has not been generated into specifics because the board of the EDD has not even been appointed yet. It's premature. The first step is to confirm the perimeter of the district and that there are no registered voters in the district, and that process is being undertaken now. So although some portion of the revenue might, and I want to underscore, might be used for the new arena, if that small portion is used for the new arena, it'll be a very, very small component of what will be primarily privately funded.
Now, the LSU Assembly Center, the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, is 53 years old, but as these facilities go, it's much younger than Pauley Pavilion, where UCLA plays, the iconic arena on the UCLA campus in Westwood. It was in 1965 when it opened. Duke's Cameron Indoor Stadium opened in 1940 and is still going strong. Why do we need a new arena at LSU?
Great question. When I was retained well over a year ago, there really wasn't any thought of a new arena. The idea, which really started in the planning phase before COVID. LSU hired the premier design firm in the country to look at the PMAC purely in the context of improving the spectator experience watching athletic events there. That was the focus, and Populous, a internationally known design firm, came in and looked at how the PMAC could be improved for athletic events. They did a fabulous study, came up with great ideas, but as is often the case, the cost was somewhere over $150 million. Just to retrofit the PMAC to be marginally competitive. What would have been the result of spending $150 million would have been a pretty modest, by today's standard, arena, and it would only have been for athletics. And there was no way to fund that. We looked at historic tax credits because, as you mentioned, it's over 50 years. Trying to qualify for that. New market tax credits. Obviously, the Economic Development District could contribute something. We would add more premium seating, which would have added some revenue, but we fell terribly short. And the principal reason that this arena is impaired is that you cannot have modern entertainment events in the PMAC. Sadly, it was never built with the thought that a present-day concert hangs about 20 tons of equipment from the structure of the building. PMAC cannot handle that. Secondly, and this wasn't obvious to me, and I love going to concerts, The ceiling of the PMAC is lower than many other arena facilities. So if you want to go see Taylor Swift in the PMAC, you know, nobody looks at her. They look at the screens. And when you can't have the screens in the PMAC because the ceiling's too low and the scoreboard is going to be right in the way. So that was a big impediment of trying to retrofit the PMAC, which was very dear to me. I hit LSU in 1971, and very much all the 6 years I was at LSU really was focused on entertainment in the PMAC. I mean, I saw the Rolling Stones kick off their North American tour. All of the famous acts.
Okay, we do have to take a break, but we'll hear from Charles Landry, attorney for Tiger Athletic Foundation. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and our guest for a bit longer is Charles Landry, the well-known attorney in Baton Rouge who is involved with the Tiger Athletic Foundation and a project that, if it works out, would have a brand new, more than $400 million arena on campus. And the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, I guess, would be used for other purposes. Do we know, Charles Landry, if this happens, where it will be located?
Likely south of the present baseball stadium. What we have done, Jim, which has been really a successful process to date, we have asked the leading developers in the country to come talk to us before we started any process and tell us what they thought about a new arena. And then we began the process giving them flexibility to tell us not only what they think would work on the for the greater Baton Rouge area, because this is really not an arena just for LSU. It happens to be on the LSU campus, but it does not work without the community support with the entertainment piece. And so it's vital to understand from the developers who are going to put significant skin in the game. They are at total risk. They will develop the arena. They will own the building. They will manage it. They'll operate it. They'll program it. And we wanted to allow them in this process to tell us what they think works and where it works best. And so there are a number of potential sites south of LSU Stadium and south of the baseball stadium that they are considering. And on June the 30th, they will come, the two semifinalists. We have two, which we think the best teams in the country are competing, happily competing, for the arena. And they will tell us for the first time, what their thoughts, their concepts, how they think this should be structured, where should it go, what should it look like, the site plan, the elevations, and the like. And Jim, one of the things that has been difficult, perhaps for some of the folks in the community to understand, is, you know, they've been, why hasn't there been more public input? Well, there hasn't been anything proposed. So President Tate, Scott Woodard, his team, they don't know what's being proposed. We want to give full flexibility to each of these teams to tell us what they think works best. And then the university will respond to that and figure out what is best, not only for the team, mm-hmm. but most importantly, the university.
But why would the mayor and the Metro Council sign off on something if they don't even know what it is?
Well, the thing is, great question, that what they signed off on doesn't apply until there is a community arena there. So nothing has happened, and nothing will happen for 3 to 4 years before we have an arena. What we do know is that the arena, from two separate independent studies, we can only have one arena in Baton Rouge. And right now, to retrofit the River Center Arena, It's somewhat of a coincidence, but it's somewhere between 120 and $150 million to retrofit the River Center for, and it would just be a modest arena retrofit. So the question is, and it's an easy one to answer. The council voted 10 in favor, one abstained, and one against. That's a landslide. That let's see if we can put this arena together where the community doesn't have to come up with $150
All right. Well, who pays for the freight here? It is a heavy...
The developer, and the developer's at risk, and the developer. And what is, you know, terrific for the university is the university gets a new arena essentially for free. So there will be blackout days, somewhere between 85 and 90 days of time, days that are for the university, for athletics, for right. commencement exercises.
But let's say,
and LSU doesn't pay for that.
Let's say, Charles, the arena attracts Taylor Swift. And who gets the money from the concert?
The developer. Thank God. That's how the developer will make the money. I mean, last year we only had 11 concerts. I could only identify two of the acts. This year, the whole year, we only have three scheduled, and it's likely mm-hmm. those will be the only three. Well, the Moody Center, which, you know, we hope to get something like that at UT. Last year, they had 120 days of activities that the developer of the Moody, this structure is what it happened at UT. There's a private developer who did that arena and will get paid back out of the revenue from entertainment.
All right, I got
there
you.
There is no revenue.
But of course, they do have access to public land and a public university and a great name, probably the greatest brand name in the state of Louisiana, LSU. So there you go.
Let me interrupt you. Ahead. That's the only reason they're talking to us.
I know.
Because of that.
I'm aware of that.
They want to use that brand.
You're right. But it is something that it has great value, as we know. So the developer knows this. But why do we not know the names of the potential developers?
Because the process is being run by Tiger Athletic Foundation, and this is a process that's been well used not only at LSU but other universities, not only in the state but the country. That this process to be able to get the financial information and have the prospective developers share information that they do not want in the public. And the Tiger Athletic Foundation was formed for this purpose. As you know, it developed the suites around the LSU stadium. It's done a number of great projects, and this process has been used for the Nicholson Northgate student apartments. There's nothing unusual about this. There's nothing that hasn't been done in many, many other universities around the state.
I'm fully aware of this public-private partnership, and LSU has deftly used this to keep information from the public. Now, you're saying, I gather, Charles, that in this case, if the information were to go to the public, it might squirrel the deal. Is that what you're saying?
100%. I mean, part of the process is that LSU and TAF, as the party who's responsible for pursuing this project for the benefit of LSU and the benefit of the community, as I said before, we have to make sure that these folks who are applying to developers have the financial wherewithal. They're not going to allow the public to get into. Both of these companies are private, and their financial information is private. So we actually have a very well considered protocol to limit who, even within TAF, can have access to their financial information for all the obvious reasons. So that's the way commerce works today. And we're not doing anything that other universities haven't done exactly in the same fashion, including LSU for many, many other projects. And the result is going to be a significant asset for the community. And if you think about, you know, going on a piece of pasture land that has no revenue, no real value to LSU, and you put a $400 million facility that not only leverages off of brand, you are totally correct, but establishes and enhances the brand, because we now have something that will be an incentive for people to come to LSU, stay at LSU, come to Baton Rouge, stay in Baton Rouge, which we don't have now. The value of that, you can't put a value on it. It's in the hundreds of millions of dollars to the community to have that asset in place.
Well, the Advocate closed its editorial of a few weeks ago. The actual date, it was March 24th, by saying there is simply no good reason for a deal this big to be done behind closed doors. Would you concur, Charles, that it would be more of a case in which the public might be trusting of what's going on if they actually knew more?
I strongly disagree with the Advocate. I think they're not at all in step with what is, you know, commerce today in universities and government generally. There are situations where I'm sure, Jim, you would very much, if you and I were going to enter into a transaction and you wanted to lease my house, that you would probably not like it for my neighbor to see your financial statement when we're trying to do something that, you know, deals with personal financial.
But I'm not a public institution. I'm a private citizen.
But this is not going to be a public asset. The developer is going to be at risk. The public component of this is very, very simple.
The developer wouldn't be doing this unless it was at LSU, though, and that's a public university.
I would tell you not necessarily. If there was a piece of property that was directly contiguous to LSU and LSU was willing to play, have their athletic events just right across the property line for free as a sole private development.
Okay, we do have to take a short break, and we'll be back and wrap it up with Charles Landry on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster, and we've been pleased to have Charles Landry, attorney for the Tiger Athletic Foundation, with us, and he is detailing the prospect of a new arena at LSU, which would, if the price tag is right, and these things often go up, be over $400 million, but it would be state-of-the-art. It obviously would draw a lot of people, and it might draw more events than the Assembly Center. That's at least the belief of the developers who are interested in doing this. But before we hit the break, Charles, you were saying that there's no exclusion on perhaps doing this somewhere else. Why not do it downtown, and then Southern University would have the same access to the arena that LSU would, and it would be an arena for the whole city, not just for Louisiana State University?
That I've been very active in Baton Rouge for now almost 40 years, and I know for 30 years that's been proposed to LSU repeatedly, and LSU has been firm and their desire to have all their athletic events on campus. That has been proposed at least three or four times as recently as 2 years ago, before this arena even was a concept that was being proposed. There were a number of folks in the community that went to the LSU and said, why don't you play your activities in River Center? The answer was no. Nolan Ryan's son, probably 8 years ago, wanted to do a semi-pro baseball stadium, right where the water campus is at the foot of the Mississippi River Bridge. And that project needed LSU to play some, but not all, of their baseball games there. And that was not something that LSU wanted to do, and as you know, built their own stadium. So that potential is not something that would be considered. And without LSU playing in this facility, for the exact reasons you stated earlier, for brand, this would not happen. But the lion's share of this money, I can't even guess what the percentage is, but it's going to be a huge portion. It's all private money on a piece of property that generates no revenue. And what's important is that all of this will come very, very clearly to the public once we know what the proposal is that we think is best for the university. That all has to go to the Board of Supervisors in very, very public meetings. It'll be advertised. There'll be plenty of opportunity for public input before the meeting and during the meeting. Any funding from the Economic Development District, which is a separate governing body, that's an open meeting, advertised.
Well, the Board of Supervisors doesn't have a very good track record on open meetings. They basically decided to name the basketball court the Sue Gunner Dale Brown Court behind closed doors, and then had a sham of a public meeting. So I'm not all that enthused about the Board of Supervisors doing things publicly. But we got time for one call. Christine in South Downs. Christine, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. You have the floor with Charles Landry.
Good morning, Spence. I appreciate your time for a little bit of input. I do wonder what clauses might be imposed on the developers to ensure minimal impact on the environment, possibly environmentally progressive.
All right. What about the environment? That's actually a pretty good question. All those
this
things.
That's a great question. Yeah, that's a great question. And part of the proposal that each of the teams have to make is what sort of sustainable components are they proposing for the facility? You know, in terms of HVAC and lighting and all of those components for sustainability. That is a component of what they are going to propose to incorporate in the building. And again, Jim, it's very important. What they're proposing doesn't mean that's what LSU is going to accept. And the fact we have two of the best teams in the country competing is very, very helpful, because we're going to understand what the best of both proposals are and have an opportunity to pick what we think is best for the university. So this question is an excellent one, and it is a component of the process.
Well, Charles Landry, thank you for joining us. I hope you'll come back, and I appreciate what you've done through the years to make our community a better place. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
And before we get to the great Susan Jackson about LSU's magnificent national championship in gymnastics, a story that's emanating in various places today, and this from The Guardian in London. For $5 million, LSU will let an oil company weigh in on faculty research activities. For $100,000, a corporation can participate in a research study with a robust reviewing power and access to all resulting intellectual property. Those are the conditions that are outlined in a document that LSU's fundraising arm circulated to oil companies and chemical companies. Records show that after Shell donated $25 million to LSU to create the Institute for Energy Innovation, the university gave the Fossil Fuel Corporation license to influence research and coursework for the university's new concentration in carbon capture, use, and storage. And we'll be talking about this in the days to come. So LSU is involved in all kinds of deals. Some of them are beneficial for the university, some of them are not, and I think this is another one that has some questions as to whether the investment made by these oil companies, primarily. We're talking Shell and Exxon, two great companies who have a lot of power in Louisiana, whether they are buying results from science as a result of their investment. We'll be discussing that. But on a happier note, Susan Jackson, who in her time was the greatest gymnast in college. She won the Honda Award in 2010, last year inducted in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame in Natchitoches. And she, like many others, is, as Hubert Humphrey would say, pleased as punch over what happened Saturday as LSU in Fort Worth, Texas, won the national championship in gymnastics. And good morning to you, Susan.
Hey, good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me on. And go Tigers.
You were there, weren't you?
I was. I made the decision to head to Fort Worth on Friday. So, yep, I was there, and I cried. Happy tears.
Well, it was, Al McGuire would say, it was a white knuckler. It came down to the very last event, didn't it?
It did. And, you know, in this arena, in this competition, we knew that was going to be the case. And so the girls definitely needed to be on, and they knew that sticking their landings up to the very last was going to do the job for them. And that's exactly what they did. So I'm proud of them.
You were there when you had great teams, but you didn't win at all. And, of course, Dee Dee Bro was there for longer than any coach, I think, in LSU history. And she's still involved with the university. But this program now, I think, has a chance to perhaps win some more. Your thoughts about where the program is right now?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's been 48 years since its inception. So to finally get here is really exciting. I think this can only help recruiting. I think, you know, more people are going to view us as potential, you know, one of the best. So that's really good. Yeah, it's fun to be an alumni sitting in the audience with Dee Dee. I could tell she really wanted to be down there, but she was so proud to see this team finally do it. It was pretty cool.
Well, and Jay Clark is obviously an excellent coach, and he has a physical plant that was developed during the Dee Dee Bro reign. I walked by that beautiful facility LSU has for gymnastics. Now, I would imagine that would be something that would be quite attractive to a recruit.
It is attractive. It's. I would say it's the best facility right now in North America. They've got all of the bells and the whistles, but that's not it. I mean, when you come on campus and you feel the LSU vibes and the traditions, I think, you know, that's more of what does it for the team. Even the PMAC, Jim. I think the PMAC is fantastic.
Yeah, the PMAC, I think, could be restored, but they want to build a new arena.
No, I'd be sad if it was no longer there.
Yeah, that's, you've got great memories of that arena. A listener asked, how good is Haley Bryant?
Haley Bryant is, I know that she looks like a robot, but I assure you that she is human. She is so good and beautiful to watch. She's got power, she's flexible, she's graceful, she's got everything that you need to be an amazing gymnast. And she's also just an amazing human, so I'm so excited for her.
You're from the great city of Houston. What propelled you to LSU back in the day, Susan?
I loved how the coaches recruited me. You know, I knew that they cared about me as Susan, not just a gymnast. And so that was really partially what did it. But also, I typed Baton Rouge into typing class in high school, and I saw that New Orleans was a quick 1 hour drive away. So that didn't hurt their case either. But actually, I never saw campus. I recruited verbaled sight unseen. So.
And you were pretty hot stuff. By 12 years old, Susan Jackson was on the U.S. national team. And we're glad that you and all the people who preceded Haley Bryant and the great team LSU has now are enthused, as you should be, as is the community at large, about the national champions. There'll be a parade Wednesday in Baton Rouge. Thanks, Susan, and congratulations, Coach Clark and his team. Back tomorrow. Stay safe. Stay tuned.